Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Drangate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Drangate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway. Coming to part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and powered by alargemanappears.com. It's me, your host, your Dr. Doom on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I am joined, as I am every week, by my faithful co-host, Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you this week?
I'm good. I'm a little bit disappointed in your intro, dear. When you said it's me, I was expecting you to go, it's me. It's
DDP.
And come up with your own shortened name to substitute in instead of DDP.
I maybe I'll keep that in the chamber for if we do. I mean, look, we've said before, it's probably inevitable we finish this podcast by doing the invasion run.
Yes.
So like we could drop it then. Okay. Which gives me a good 4 years to come up with. And you know what? Mark this podcast now, because I won't.
Oh, no, you won't.
I won't. We'll be talking about that SummerSlam cage match with the Brothers of Destruction, and I still won't come up with a gag. My Sarah on Thunder Road at some point.
Here's a question for you to start off the podcast. Is that SummerSlam cage match worse than anything we'll see on the rest of our run?
I don't know. I can't remember if one of the nitros we have earmarked is Viagra on a pole or not.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. See, this is the thing as well about what I love about this era of WCW. My memories get clearer and yours get murkier. So I have a slightly better idea than you of what you have yet to see. Only some of which am I willing to divulge in advance.
Viagra on a pole wasn't on the same show as the San Francisco 49ers match, was it?
I don't think so, but could I rule it out? No, I couldn't.
It couldn't be multiple pole matches on one nitro.
We have the San Francisco 49ers match as a Thunder, I'm almost certain.
Okay.
Deadlock beat us to the punch on that one, but we will definitely be covering that match. Who could forget? But yeah, and any crack with you? I'm like, it's been a big weekend of comic book news all over my feed, so it's weird to talk about wrestling because wrestling has not been the thing everybody's giving out about on my feeds.
I'm not in comic book Twitter and whatever, but is everyone giving out about Robert Downey Jr. as Doctor Doom? Is that the goss?
Much as it is my eternal shame to say, I am one of the people giving out about it, because like going back to when I was a kid, Doctor Doom was my guy.
Okay.
And like, yeah, the whole thing about it being RDJ as Doctor Doom means that character won't be certain things that it really should be. The cliff notes of how I feel about it are, it's like, it's part of the way those movies are now, where it's all about the cameo and the sugar rush of, hey, it's that guy, and not the, hey, let's make a good film.
Yes, I did see someone in the Slack saying, if you don't want to know the cameos that are in Deadpool and Wolverine, whatever it's called,
yeah,
do not look up the IMDb, because apparently there's copious amounts of cameos and special appearances.
Also, all over my feed, like last night as we're recording this, because they did the panel for Marvel, which is where the Doctor Doom announcement happened, and like flat out, almost all the people who did cameos just walked out on stage. So like, if you were just on Twitter last night, that movie's spoiled on you now. Cause...
Thank God I'm no longer on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun though. It's dumb, but it's fun. But I suppose let's get back in towards wrestling. We were just talking off airly about how we're less than a month away from doing the thing we always do, which is see each other in person and not record a podcast.
You sound like we do this all the time. We did it once last year.
Yeah, but you know, Jack was just asking me earlier tonight, friend of the show, and who'll be
your,
with us.
Your friend of the show. Your friend. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Across the bow. He will not listen to this, so you're safe. Actually, no, he did say that he listens to this podcast just for this section, and as soon as we start talking about WCW, he stops listening because he doesn't know anything about WCW.
That's fair.
So, hey, Jack. So we have Jack who listens to just this part, and Alan who listens to all of it, but like 6 years later. So it's a good, it's, our friends are great. But Jack was just asking me this earlier on, is like, why are you doing it? Because I was saying that you actually work in the vicinity of where I live now.
Yes.
And he was asking, he's like, why do you never do podcasts in person? And I was like, you don't understand the relative industries me and Lee are in, that we basically have shared custody of my town. It's like, you enter it like a couple of hours before I leave it, and then you leave it maybe 4 hours before I come back.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's I'm beginning work as you are. Well, I'm probably halfway through my work day by the time you're like crawling out of bed.
Yeah. I come in around noon.
Yes,
in my job, but I stay till 8 or 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It's what makes recording this show anyway, even in two separate locations, a bit tricky at times. But it is funny that for the amount you frequent this town, we've only seen each other in this town once. Like, was it pre-COVID?
Oh,
like you and Jen saw me across the street one day.
That's right. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
We didn't even stop and talk. We just kept going.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, do people who like see us interact, like, do they go, they can't be friends? Like, they carry on like they just met each other in a party once, and it's like, oh, hey, it's that guy.
Look, we're not as bad as Lance and Craig, who did a podcast for like 10 years before ever meeting each other, and
they
then decided
kept
to
that gimmick going,
and then decided to meet each other at a fucking TNA show at like midnight. Yeah.
They should have kept that gimmick going and never met each other and not even been able to describe each other, but like for a police sketch.
But then they would never have, you know, been able to take that photo with Cody Rhodes.
It's very true.
there's some flagship show for you.
the legendary third chair on the flagship, Cody Rhodes. Right, should we go to 1999? Because like, there's fuck all I want to talk about in 2024 wrestling at the moment. To be honest, I'm excited to go to Wembley, but like, I don't know if you have this now, Lee, because I know you're in our Slack and our Discord more than I am, but like, I'm actually, as much as I'm still consuming the exact same amount of wrestling I always was, and I'd love to hear from our listeners on this, I am exhausted about talking about and also taking in other people talking about 2024 wrestling. And I don't mean like, so like, I'll still listen to a couple of podcasts like the flagship and stuff like that to keep up to date on news, and things like that. But I suppose I mean capital D discourse, because I've had a grab bag radio I've had like in a semi-finished state for about a week and a half now, but the section about talking about my takes on wrestling that's going on at the moment is the bit that's stalling me, because I just don't give a shit. Yeah. Not about what's happening. There's stuff I care about, but I'm so burnt out on talking about, on being involved in the discourse.
Yeah, I don't do Twitter anymore, so I don't, like, I will see something, like, somebody like will post something in either the Discord or the Slack, and I'll see something, and I'll just throw, like, a snarky tweet here and there. But, like, I post and go. Like, you can deal with the reaction or fallout, whatever I may say. But yeah, I'd be in the Discord a lot, and it genuinely, it really is exhausting dealing with certain fan types and personality types, and like I get it, it can be tiring, and I genuinely do think at times the best thing to do is just log off, just watch what you want to watch. Enjoy what you want to enjoy. Like, we even see it, like, in the VOW Slack, like, some of the disagreements and takes and...
Yeah.
Like, it genuinely can be just, mind-meltingly exhausting.
I think it's the lack of good faith anymore in talking about things that I struggle with.
Everybody has a side, and everybody has a bias, and... And then when you, like, you will say to somebody, yeah, but that's, you know, your ex-bias, like, you're a huge WWE fan, or you're a huge AEW fan, and everyone will be like, well, no, I'm just right. And it's like, that's not how discussion works.
Everybody has biases, conscious and unconscious. Like, yes. I know I have a bias toward AEW in some ways, because I think... when it's at its best, it presents a vision of wrestling closer to what I want than any other company services now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not immune from my criticism. There's plenty I hate that they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just on today talking about... somebody talked about it was X years ago today that the awesome Hangman Dark Order entrance happened.
Oh, yes.
And I was just I just put out one tweet, which was just about how... like, it's crazy when you look at how clearly this guy is, you know, to borrow something that Joe always says, like, he's the main character of the entire promotion for the last 5 years. Like, he definitely should be. He's not always been the main focus, but Hanger is the main character of AEW. And watching that contrasted with how lame the Elite entrance was in that same match as when they did the Space Jam entrance, because they did the Space Jam 2 tie-in. And like, I had people in the mentions and like they're right in what they were saying, in that like the whole idea was they were supposed to be lame posers, so it was intentionally a little bit that way. And I was like, yeah, but also I don't like that. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying they didn't hit the goal of what they were trying to do. I'm saying I don't like that. But my whole point in saying it was not just I didn't like it, but just that, like, that was years ago, and should that not have shown you which set of people were played out and shouldn't be the main focus of this promotion, and who should be in Hanger? And I'm just like, yeah.
I had a take recently in the Discord, and I don't think I ever actually got an answer, like a satisfactory answer, because it was ignored by a lot of people. It's funny when you see things like MJF gets a lot of abuse for the way his programs are booked because he has a big hand in it. Chris Jericho gets a lot of abuse because of how his programs are booked and how much TV time he gets. Will Ospreay is now getting a lot of abuse over the Tiger Driver storyline. And rightly so. Like, none of these guys are perfect. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's another case of the Tiger Driver thing is another perfect example of what I was saying with the Space Jam thing, where it's like, he's doing that thing exactly as he should, but the thing itself is dumb.
It's dumb. But, like, if you look in certain places, the people that will be defended the most are the books. And what the books are doing right now is fucking dog shit.
Like, it's way worse.
This whole authority angle is so shit. And has so many fucking holes in it. Like, there's fucking blocks of Swiss cheese out there with less holes in this fucking storyline.
One of the only things I was holding my hat on through the summer, trying to go, okay, it'll be over soon, is like maybe they're healing them up so that when the Motor City Machine Guns eventually come in, and now the Motor City Machine Guns are going to NXT, and I'm just like, oh fuck, now I'm just putting up with this for nothing.
It's
yeah. What the fucking like God bless them. I love their matches a lot of the time, but like the next FTR feud is like I'm not into that.
Yeah,
like, who else is there?
I don't need to see FTR books again.
Who are like, the baby faces that are getting the rub off this? That's making me, because like you know with the Tony thing, I'm just like there's so much of that Tony stuff that wasn't working for me, and I'm just like, but if the ultimate thing is
the payoff, Mariah, yeah, if yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then have Jamie Hayter come back and this division is in a way better state.
If the payoff is that the Mariah feud brings Tony back to Tony, then it's worked. Yeah.
And that's why I put up with a lot of it. Like, I didn't like it. I liked a lot of the matches, but I didn't like a lot of the stories in the Kenny world title run.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew it was getting us to Hanger.
Yes.
And I was like, it will be worth it if they pull this off right. And that's what I have no faith in the books thing being pulled off right.
I don't know if you saw that. I think it was Suit in the Slack recently, a couple of days ago, put up a thing. He's like, this company used to be so well booked, they told you who the first four champions were going to be. And it was the poster for the first All Out. And it was Jericho, Moxley, Omega, Hangman. And he's like, they told you. They was right there.
Yeah. This, like, I mean, we could expand on it so much. This, like, their reactive booking. They're trying to steal an audience from WWE, even though they're never going to do that.
I mean, there's so many, like, so much stuff. Like, I still...
But the thing is, like, the thing that keeps you going, like, not only are matches and pay-per-views still fucking class. Like, even when you tune into Dynamite, like, you're... and Collision, like guaranteed once a week at least you're getting a really class match. Yeah. At least one.
Like look, you know what I mean? Look how over Hologram has gotten in fucking 2 weeks.
Yeah. And like the other thing is, you know, because of how stacked it is and because of what it was, that literally like a 3 month run of good, logical, simple booking and this thing. Now I'm not saying the ratings are going to turn around in a hurry or catch fire or get back to like a million or anything like that, but in terms of like it will become must-see television for me, it doesn't take that much of a course correction. There's so much stuff that's on the cusp of being great or so much stuff that's currently bad that if it just like if things were simplified would be way better. I did see one thing this week that actually like properly, I don't know if you saw this MV that somebody put together where there's like they should just go the whole hog with Jack Perry and make him Raven. They superimposed him coming out to Come As You Are, and I'm like, I don't usually like a lot of those when people do that. It's not my kind of thing generally, but I saw that and I was just like, Tony, somebody get this in front of Tony. Because
I did see somebody put it in the Slack, and I did see somebody say they were going to DM somebody. I think the tweet I saw was like, you have to make Jack Perry into Raven, and it was on one side it was Raven, Beulah, and Stevie, and then it was Jack, and a Jay, and I can't remember who the third was.
Yeah,
but it's just like,
yeah, because it doesn't need to be full flock or anything like that, but just that. Like, just make him a fuck. Like, the thing about Raven is just the main thing is that he was
a scumbag
piece of shit.
Yeah, he was just a scumbag.
And that's what he should be. Anyway, I love that we said like we're both exhausted talking about wrestling and then proceeded to, because like we're just again, that's how close we are to you could have us back in.
You can get excited
praising this shit so simple. You know what I mean?
Put us in the fucking room.
Yeah. Let's go to 1999 and talk about the Observer. And it's a bit of a quiet week in terms of like lead stories as it pertains to what we're doing. There have been loads of weeks where we've been blessed where the top stories are so essential to what we're covering or to what's happening in WWF. But the two lead stories this week are basically Dave mourning that he's officially calling an end to the period where ECW were trying to be number two.
Okay.
He said, it's very apparent now after the, I think it's November to Remember has just happened. Yeah. November to Remember. He said it's very apparent that not only are they the distant number three, but that they're kind of happy just to stay there now. The gap is so wide and they're not showing the intent that they once did, and the quality is not what it once was. So they're just kind of stuck here now, and that's wherever they will be. Although it is very funny knowing the how the future pans out for ECW that he says, well, at the very least, they're out of debt for now.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like, oh, that wouldn't last long, Dave. Or it wasn't happening then, and somebody, Paul, was lying to you.
I was just going to say, somebody wasn't being upfront about the fucking computer game deal.
Yeah, the other thing, and it's funny because do you remember recently, Lee, we were talking about the rapturous reception to Have a Nice Day, mm-hmm. and how much people just fucking love Foley and everybody's so happy for that book being a success and nobody wishes ill will towards Mick Foley. Different story of a book, because the second lead story in The Observer this week is Dave reviewing a book called Pure Dynamite.
Oh, God.
I won't get into it too much. I mean, it is worth reading his review. I'm told the book is worth reading because he said, like, unlike the one thing he can say that it has over Have a Nice Day for sure is that it's brutally and to a point accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the one where I think a lot of people's eyes were open to the fact that the Dynamite Kid was a fucking shithead.
Yep. This was... Again, I've never read it. I've only seen the excerpts and, you know, all the kind of famous excerpts. I think brutally honest to the point of problematic is probably the best way of saying it because, yeah, Dynamite was not a nice guy. Never was. Wasn't well liked. Incredible wrestler.
Yeah.
But an equally incredible piece of shit.
That's the one thing that you're left with is, like, that's how good this guy was in the ring, because anybody who wasn't as good as he was would have been buried and, chased out of the industry, mm-hmm. or people just wouldn't talk about him. But they do talk about how, like, Dave says still to this day, it's arguable that his matches with the original Tiger Mask are some of the most important matches to happen in the history of mm-hmm. professional wrestling. And the other point of interest... that I thought was really, really worth noting from this skimmed review of the book is that seemingly Dynamite Kid was one of the very early people who said Kenta Kobashi is a special talent.
Oh, really? Okay.
So apparently he was an early, I don't know, again, it was just a little bit of an excerpt of what Dave said, was saying that he was one of the very early champions of Kenta Kobashi. I don't know in what way or anything like that. You'd have to read the review or read the book to get a bit more detail on that, but I thought that was a bit interesting. Goldberg is going to be headlining the Tokyo Dome.
Is he?
On 1/4, yes. So he is the headliner. Do you know who he will be wrestling? Think about New Japan, late 99, early 2000. Who do you think he's wrestling?
2000. Nakanishi.
And I'll tell you one thing. I can say with confidence, you won't be right.
Okay, go on. I said Nakanishi, but go on. Who was it?
In a really strange story, it was announced on 11/9 in Japan that Bill Goldberg's opponent on the 1/4 Tokyo Dome show would be, drumroll, Rick Steiner.
Oh. Why?
And that Bill Bush from WCW would be attending the show.
Okay.
It makes absolutely no sense to bring in Goldberg and not put him against a Japanese wrestler, so my feeling is that WCW didn't trust and wouldn't allow its star in the ring against anyone but a WCW wrestler. New Japan's original plan was to debut Kenzo Suzuki.
Oh, God.
against Goldberg on this show. The question of who would be going over in that match would not be an issue, as the idea was for me to be a typical WCW TV Goldberg squash, with Suzuki getting one hot spurt of offense to make the impression that soon he'd be a major player. A press conference was scheduled for 11/11 to announce the top matches on the Dome show, which would be something with Anita and Tenryu versus Choshu and Fujinami, or something close to that, with Sasaki versus Tenryu plus Muto versus Chono for the IWGP title in pretty much a definite... and of course Hashimoto versus Ogawa. What have we got coming up next? Oh man.
I tell you what, that's some difference a year makes, because on 1/4/1999 Goldberg was getting arrested for stalking Elizabeth.
Yeah. Oh, what a difference a year makes, eh?
Because, of course, the finger poke of Doom is $1,499.
Jesus. It's hard to put, like, I mean, I guess because in podcast time, it's been...
years.
It's been 2 years since we talked about that. But anyway, do you want to hear about NWA Worldwide out of Nashville?
Sure.
Things are fucking going a bit weird down south at the moment, let me tell you. It's under new ownership. They set their all-time attendance record, drawing 1,353 fans. All tickets were priced at $5, though. For a show that included the Fabulous Ones, Jerry Lawler, Terry Taylor, and Sherry Martel. Fabulous Ones lost to the New South, which are Corey Williams and Ashley Hudson in the main event. Where am I going here with this? Oh, yes. Okay, this is what I wanted to talk about. Just in terms of what's going on in that area at the moment. It's come to this, Dave writes, which is always a foreboding start. On the 11/6 Memphis TV show, they opened with Kevin Christian coming out with a bouquet of...
That's Lawler's son, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Brian or the other one?
Kevin. I think they're both. I think Kevin, Christian is Kevin Lawler, I think.
Yeah, you're right. So he came out of a limo with a bouquet of flowers, acting all choked up. He claimed he had bad news that Tommy Rich and Doug Gilbert had died. Announcers Dave Brown and Corey Macklin acted like it was an angle, but Christian said he was serious and they'd have a memorial service that night. Brian Christopher and Spellbinder came out and Christopher hugged Macklin and Spellbinder was crying. Christopher did a mock funeral service. Spellbinder said that Tommy Rich began his career in Memphis and was the youngest and shortest lived world champion, and loved mama, babies, and beer, but would always be remembered as a loser. Christopher said Gilbert was from a redneck town and was named Dangerous after he picked up a cigarette butt and spit it out and it burned down Tommy and Peggy's trailer. He said the ice cream man gave Peggy long popsicles. He said Tommy never drew a cent in wrestling and neither did Doug. He claimed to have brought out the remains because their families were too cheap to have a real funeral. They said Rich's remains were in a beer can and that Gilbert's were in a vacuum cleaner since it was the only thing that sucked worse than Doug. That's a good line. The lights went out and Rich and Gilbert hit the ring and chased the Lawler brothers and Spellbinder away. Rich said that Spellbinder wasn't on steroids, he'd only weigh 110 pounds. Gilbert said that Christopher never got over anywhere in the country and the only reason he was successful early in career is because his father Jerry Lawler owned the company. Brown acted upset. It was a double kayfabe violation because even though everyone knows within Memphis and always have known, they've been careful not to acknowledge either Brian or Kevin as Jerry's son, although Lawler agreed to allow Paul Heyman to make that remark on national TV a few years back. Even more, even more, they never acknowledged Lawler as the former owner. Gilbert then talked about how Randy Hale smoked crack. Brown threatened to cut off the mic, and Gilbert said one last thing, that Jerry Lawler raped a 13-year-old girl.
Okay.
And Dave and Corey freaked out and immediately ordered them to go to a break. You have to assume everything on a television wrestling show, this is Dave, to be a work, unless conclusively proven otherwise. Brown did act upset by all this, and I don't think that's something that Lawler would want brought up, even in an intense wrestling angle, let alone... what isn't even his angle in a company that he's not even working for. Years ago, and this was no work, when they were working for opposing promotions out of Louisville and Lawler was under indictment on the charge, Gilbert, who hated Lawler, wore t-shirts with Lawler's mugshot from the arrest and wrote about it in the promotions program. Lawler was furious at the time. So this is another, you talk about like that whole, like wrestlers really believe there's nothing you can't bring up if you won't make money from it.
Yeah. I couldn't believe
that, like, even if you hate that, like, I couldn't believe at the time that somebody would just say that on television. It's mental.
Yeah, to bring that up is like, especially considering like Lawler's paying him. Like it's really fucking, yeah. Like, nobody's... I don't know.
Yeah. Ohio Valley Wrestling changing tone entirely. runs its next major show at the Louisville Gardens, which is one of their favorite places to run their big shows. Matt and Jeff Hardy on the show. So this is during that, again, there's a long period of time with OVW where they'd have a big show and they'd send down like two or three mid-carders to do spot shows, which was like a really cool, like, it's still to this day the healthiest way WWE ever did developmental.
It literally was like the best way they had it, because they weren't running it. They had actual trainers.
Yeah.
And they would send down people to work with the talent.
And it was an actual promotion. Yeah. So they had to sell tickets. They had to do programs. Mm-hmm. And they, WWF would send down either new wrestlers they'd signed, they'd send down injured wrestlers that were on the way back, or they'd send people who were off TV and needed kind of creative retooling. Mm-hmm. And it worked so well for everybody. I mean, probably Big Show doesn't have a great story to tell about when he was chucked off TV and
sent down
to the doldrums.
Sent to fat camp, I believe is what they said on TV.
But a lot of people would have. So Matt and Jeff Hardy will be against local tag champs Jason Lee and Rip Rogers in a ladder match. I love bringing up names from OVW at the time, because like sometimes they were there at the time, and sometimes I was like, oh, is that not a bit early from them? Rob Conway is defending his OVW World Heavyweight title against Rico Constantino in a coal miner's glove match, which is the most cornet pill stipulation in the world.
Do you know what though? I'd say that match was good.
Probably was. Like, I mean, yeah, like both of them guys, like they more so suffered on the main roster, one because of the gimmicks they had, and two because of how fucking old Rico was by the time he got to TV. Like
Rico was what, 43 when he got called up?
Yeah. And the rest. In Puerto Rico, the main angle being promoted is that they're building towards the debut of Carlos Colon's son, Carly.
Ah.
So I didn't realize how long the future Carlito would be on, would have been like between debut and moving over to WWE.
It's a good 3 years, yeah.
2003, he's up. Interesting one.
The Judgment Day's Carlito, who's still on TV 24 years later.
Rita Miro doing well at the moment. She's in GQ. She's got two TV shows, cameos. It's TV. She's going to be on an episode of Relic Hunter, which I have heard of. That's the Tia Carrere show, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Or it was. That used to be on Sky One all the time. And she's going to be doing a movie in Vancouver called Doppelganger 224, which I can't say I've ever heard of. but she is making hay while the sun shines. One thing that I love, we already talked about him on this show, but Raven's already eyeing a move to greener pastures. Now, I think we had mentioned this before, that old Scott Levy, he really wanted to go to WWF.
Yes.
But they wouldn't let him go. So there was suspicion that as soon as he signed a short-term deal with ECW and would be heading to WWF as soon as he could, which is what happened.
Yeah, I think it was like a 6 months, you can't go there deal kind of thing.
Yeah. Which is kind of like, we all tell the story of like Bischoff gave him the release, like, but that's the part of the story we don't talk about enough, is that, well, I'll release you. You can't go there, though.
Yeah. Again, Bischoff, the greatest business mind in all of Twitter, that, you know, stood up in front of a meeting and said, I'll let anyone go that wants to go.
Yeah, but it's interesting, I think, to show the PR that Russo and Ferreira are doing, that people think it's a whole new WCW, because this Scott Levy piece, he was asked in Alex Marvez's column on the Observer website about his future plans, and he wouldn't dismiss the possibility of returning to WCW.
There you go.
And he predicted they'd pull even with the WWF in ratings within 4 months. Levy said he could have worked around the rotator cuff injury in WCW, like he has in ECW. So you remember, towards the end of his run, he was appearing back on TV, but he wouldn't wrestle. So his rotator cuff was gone. He said he sat it out because that's what everyone else did there.
It's not wrong.
He also predicted ECW doing a 1.6 in the next 2 or 3 months and a 2.0 in a year, provided they can add one or two big names to the roster. I would not hold my breath, sir. We move to the WCW news briefs now. Turner Broadcasting announced that the former position held by Dr. Harvey Schiller will be split up among several existing high-level executives, and I think this would be quite important going forward. Brad Siegel will be the one in charge of overseeing WCW. Siegel is the president of General Entertainment Networks for Turner. It's too early to tell what that will mean in the long run, although it does place WCW under the entertainment umbrella rather than under Turner Sports, as bad as it had been. The departure of Schiller is said to have greatly decreased the odds of Eric Bischoff being brought back as a heel manager. Because this is the thing, and I think one of the things Who Killed WCW talks about quite well is that even though him and Bischoff had a close relationship, Siegel was the one that was like, all right.
that's enough.
Siegel and Schiller. Yeah, isn't it? That's enough, Eric. So, yeah. That's what's so funny is that to say that decreases the odds. He is back within 3 months.
Yes. it's April, isn't it?
It's March, April. Like, yeah. I don't know when exactly he signs on the dotted line. Yeah, he's back on TV by April.
Oh, yeah. April is the reboot. Happen. Yeah. April is the reboot, Night Trouble. He was obviously agreed to come back before that.
Based on what we're hearing, when Nitro goes to 2 hours in January, it'll be 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. There are more pluses to minuses to that slot as opposed to 9 to 11. First, it gives them the unopposed hour to build second hour main events. In theory, in the head-to-head hour, put WCW's main events against WWF's mid-card guys, so it artificially will give the impression of closing the gap. Well, that is kind of, I think, a smart TV. That's not necessarily how things pan out, but I think that is a smart strategy. Because at the very worst, you're forcing WWF to have to try and front load their shows to keep the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a pretty good, I think it is maybe foolish to think the gap is going to just close like that. I think a lot more than just changing the time slot on the length of the show is needed, but hey, what can you do?
People
are going to be losing.
That's going to say
30. Oh, sorry.
People were still optimistic about the odds of WCW closing the gap at this point.
Yeah. We have the news that Terry Taylor was officially rehired to work in booking. They were able to get the... We won't get into it right now. But they were able to get the complaint at Human Resources against him from when he previously worked there taken care of. And that opened the door to make a serious offer. Dusty Rhodes and Sonny Ono are said to no longer be with the company. The story is that Dusty Rhodes made a play for Russo's spot, which failed, and he quit on 11-1. Like that... And Russo's in the door 2 weeks and Dusty tries to lead a coup.
Oh, Dusty, will you ever learn?
In 1999, I genuinely don't know which would have been the worst outcome. Him being run out or him being in charge of creative again.
Would Dusty have brought things back, or would Dusty have enabled Nash and Hall and all their bad ideas?
Seemingly, it sounds like... Well, let me read this. After Russo had nixed the idea for Dustin Rhodes' gimmick, Spooky Window Pedophile, which was said to be pitched as a cross between The Undertaker and Goldust, it was proposed that Rhodes do an angle with his father, paying off their legitimate background problems. Dusty supposedly wanted to be no part of it. By the afternoon of 11-8, the general feeling in the company once the script got out as it regarded Dustin Rhodes' interview in Nitro... And how he was going to bring up the heartless powers that that be firing his father after 25 years, that Dusty was quitting was another Hogan-esque work. Ono got the position in wrestling because he was tight with Bischoff and knew some Japanese, so he was heavily involved in the dealings with New Japan. However, New Japan and virtually all the Japanese he came in contact with wound up hating him.
Jesus.
Dave dropped some science here, saying a New York Post article came out on wrestling writers... claimed that Nitro's audience has jumped 25% since Russo and Ferrer came. He said that's a misleading stat if I've ever heard one, and then basically dropped signs about how that is an artificial interpretation of the numbers. Sorry, Vince.
And who would have thought that 25 years later we'd still be talking, or Russo would still be talking about how he brought the numbers up a certain amount? And it wasn't actually
happened. He undeniably did a great job of getting people on his side to put that narrative forward at the time. But it has no credibility whatsoever. The name Ready to Rumble for the WCW movie involved striking a deal with the Buffer brothers, Bruce and Michael. This is going to upset you because I know stories of how much money WCW were still wasting in 99 really annoy you. Since Michael has the phrase trademark for commercial usage, the word is that WCW paid Michael $500,000 for his cameo in the movie and rights to use the phrase. So much for keeping the budget in check. There's another eye-watering budget story coming up here now, but these are just a couple of little news briefs. We knew this was happening. We talked about it at the time, but after getting a second opinion, Mysterio was told that he would definitely be needing knee surgery. He has a torn meniscus he's been wrestling on for over a month now, which is why his match with Malenko on Nitro was so short. He's getting the knee scoped and is hopeful of being able to be back in the next 6 to 8 weeks. I believe, if I remember right, he's out for 6 months. He's out in May. Lots of signs at the 11-8 Nitro looked to be planted in the crowd. The handwriting on them was similar, and you would think they would have brought the signs to different parts of the arena. An absolute burial of Tony Schiavone here. After the past 2 weeks of Thunder, it seems pretty clear that Scott Hudson should be the regular host of Nitro as well.
Jesus.
Next one is that, generally we noticed a change in the kind of who was being put on Saturday night. There's a little bit of detail on that. So a quick report from the 11-9 Saturday night taping in Champaign, Illinois, is that the next 2 weeks of shows are worth seeing. The names who were there worked really hard because everyone likes Jimmy Hart and wants to see the show succeed. And some of the Power Plant wrestlers with no names showed a lot of potential, with Kid Romeo being mentioned in specific. So it seems like, I mean, we were talking about the motives behind doing it, and how much of it was people not wanting to do a Saturday night taping versus how much of it was wanting to blood new guys. But it seems like at least these two tapings, before I'm sure it's meddled with and fucked up again, seem to be creating that hungry atmosphere of these young guys trying to make a name for themselves. And like everything I've heard as well about Jimmy Hart is that he's quite well liked.
Yeah, I think the thing is, until we get to the Bischoff-Russo era, is that Russo just had no interest in being in control of Saturday night. So he did genuinely just leave it to Jimmy Hart to book whoever he wanted.
Yeah. Who would have known of all the people they gave the book to at different points in WCW that somebody maybe they should have given it to was Jimmy Hart, who was actually going to try with the young guys? The Lenny and Lodi characters, which I guess some thought must have been given to reviving as Vince Russo on the WCW internet radio show said at one point they would be back, have been dropped again. So don't expect them back anytime soon. They were supposed to be back imminently up until a couple of weeks ago. Wrath was given word on 10/29 that he was being dropped from his $350,000 per year contract, but was later told it was one of those deals where they wanted to re-sign him, but for a lower amount. Stevie Ray is also in the process of having his contract renegotiated downwards, and I'm glad you're sitting down, Lee, because you're about to find out that Stevie Ray is currently on $750,000 per year.
Jesus Christ. Now, do you know what? I can understand at a certain point if you said in like 1996 that you wanted to keep Harlem Heat away from the WWF. But not 750,000.
And also, yeah, and because it is 1999, WWF are not trying to take Stevie Ray from you.
No, but like if you said he had signed a 3 or 4 year contract in 95, 96.
Yeah.
But like main eventers in the WWF were getting high six figures.
Yeah.
Like not.
I would, if they were getting a new contract out of Booker and they were offering him 750 now, I'd be like, okay,
yes,
he's one you need to lock down for years, and he has the leverage there because I imagine WWF would be interested, or at least should be.
Yeah,
you know. Whereas now, like with a lot of these, like with the Rats and with the Stevie Rays, as cynical as it is, it probably is a good time to strike on guys like that with lower deals. Because the leverage is now, like, these are guys that WWF aren't going to take, and ECW don't have the money.
I was just going to say, I can't imagine a Stevie Ray going to ECW and busting the gut to get over and...
Yeah. Yeah. These are the guys that, like, it very cynically you would target for cutting their deals down to size. Whereas I think the actual fair evaluation of it is they shouldn't have been on that money in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know what? I could imagine Brian Clark going to ECW and trying.
Yeah.
Now, would he have agreed to whatever amount of money ECW would give him? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The artist is about to get his muse because the woman formerly known as Ryan Shamrock is said to be very close or having already signed a one-year $60,000 contract. Terry Taylor, who is responsible for getting Christina Laum, formerly Kimona, her job interview with the WWF, now being in WCW, is in the working at getting her in here. Several more Power Plant trainees were also dropped from their contract. Of the younger wrestlers at the Power Plant, the reports were that CG Offey, the guy who played the Lodi fan, and now Tony Marinara, is the standout of that list. The amount of money that Jeff Jarrett held WWE up for on the last day was less than $200,000, but well in excess of $100,000. Jarrett refused to do the show and dropped the IC title to China unless he got what was perceived, what he perceived would be all the money that was due to him, including pay-per-view payoffs for August through October. So there you go.
Wasn't the final figure something like $170,000? It was something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a thing I actually skipped over. This is chilling. Something that is edging closer to reality, according to Dave, is the idea of a one-hour Saturday show for WCW being a comedy hour starring Hall, Nash, and Mark Madden. They are currently having meetings in creative to flush out this concept. Flush being the appropriate verb.
That was, they were going to cut an hour from Saturday night, wasn't it? Wasn't that the the plan?
This is incredible. I hope this footage of this, somebody should send us this. True story, Bret Hart was in England to promote Wrestling with Shadows and appeared on their version of MTV with a host who did no research when a caller asked Hart how he thought he would be compared with all-time great legends of wrestling, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and Earthquake. He rolled his eyes and got that what a mark look on his face and asked the caller how he thought he would compare with those three greats. The caller said he was up there, but Hogan was the greatest because he was 60 years old and still wrestling. Which, he wasn't 60 at the time, no, but like, certainly moved like one.
God bless that caller.
The Hall and Nash versus three strippers match on 1025, which got its fair share of heat with the higher-ups, not to mention a lot of complaints from fans in Phoenix, also got a pretty significant photo spread in the 1028 Tokyo Sports Edition. Apparently the blonde woman, I guess owing to what she does to get pops in her own form of entertainment, did some things unplanned and unexpected, like rubbing Hall's face into her breasts. There you go. That's the WCW news in brief. That gets you fired up to talk about another edition of the show, doesn't it?
I have a feeling that won't be the last time we talk about the Hall and Nash versus the porn stars segment.
Yes. Okay, this is Thunder episode 88 from Fort Wayne, Indiana. 11th of the 11th, 1999. The streak is broken, Lee. It's a 2.1 rating, down by 0.3. Ooh. The bubble's burst. The boom is over.
They're in the mud, Dave. They're in the mud.
I know, right? Remember, we talked about it. Like Vince said, those ratings were climbing for, was it 3 months, he said?
Yeah.
3 months. Is this 4 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 4 weeks.
It's 4 weeks, it is.
Anyway, stop me if you've heard this one before. We open up with Lash LaRue versus Evan Courageous, which I feel like is just, there's a combination of dudes now where if you told me this was the first time they wrestled, and the sixth time they wrestled and we talked about it on the show, I would say yes.
Okay, so a lot happens in this segment. First of all, we find out that there's only 8 people left in the tournament now.
Yep.
The tournament that...
I mean, fucking just clipping through it.
Apparently so.
We haven't seen a single match in it on Thunder. No. They've been doing it all on Nitro.
But there's only 8 people left in the tournament now. Evan Courageous got into a scrap with a referee, and the referee threw some better working punches than Evan Courageous.
Didn't he? I was thinking about this.
Johnny Boone has a hell of a right hand. And Disco is still the Cruiserweight champion. He comes out on commentary.
Yeah.
And in probably one of the most... I don't say racist names, but Tony Marinara is pretty up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty up there.
What,
we actually should have checked in with Joe. Is that an offensive Italian stereotype?
I was just going to say, is this more offensive Italian-American stereotypes in pro wrestling that Joe is constantly talking about?
Yeah, it could be. We'd have to check in with him on this. I almost want to DM him right now and get a live reaction, but I won't.
Or is Mama Luke more offensive?
Yeah, that's tough to say. What would the poll be? Answers on a postcard for listeners. Tony Mamaluke or Tony Marinara, which is the more offensive Italian stereotype name? So you've kind of cut through a lot of my notes on this match. One of the questions I was going to ask you was, did you remember that he was still Cruiserweight champion? Because I didn't.
I did, because he comes out on commentary all the time. Anytime there's a Cruiserweight match, it seems to be Disco's on commentary.
Disco backed himself to have a date with Medusa as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've Evan knocking Lash out of the ring. Medusa flirts with Disco, but is very clearly trying to just take his belt off him. And it's really bad comedy where she's like trying to subtly take the belt off him. But he kind of, like a referee, has to act blind to something that's happening directly in front of him. Just as the match finally settles down, it's like, okay, we're actually going to get some wrestling here. Disco goes back to flirt again. It happens about four times, and on the fourth time it happens, Evan goes out, flattens Disco, walks back into a whiplash, and Lash wins. And then, yeah, it just gets more... It's just such a mess of a thing, because then Disco insists he's going to put... Like, Disco is the heel champion, right? And he's saying he'll put 25k on the line for Evan to challenge him and that he won't be able to beat him at the pay-per-view. And then Evan ups the ante by insisting on a title match, and then Lash, who is unrelated to this challenge, lays out Disco. Absolute fucking mess. It makes no sense why, unprompted, the heel would put up 25k in the match, and also then why, under no threat of danger at all,
well,
he just goes, yeah, I'll put my title on the line as well.
Well, see, Disco is trying to get money. Disco's in debt. That's the story.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
Disco's now...
But the title thing still makes no sense then.
Disco's now a degenerate gambler. Now, if he was an intelligent degenerate like Ric Flair, he would just sell his title.
Yeah.
To high spots.
True. That actually would have been like... that would have been a very WCW angle of him hawking the belt.
Just showing up every week. I lost the belt. Fucking.
Do like the Junkyard Battle Royal again, but it's in the pawn shop. But it has to be specifically the pawn shop that... a pawn shop that's made it in the back of the jewelers that Ted DiBiase went to get his belt.
Oh, do you know what would happen? If somebody did this angle now, you would have them selling it to a mark like Conrad Thompson or something on the show.
Yeah,
some belt collector.
I could get on board. That's a belt mutant.
Yeah. You just see them. You see them stand on front row then every week.
Yeah.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
WCW Mayhem the Music is on sale November 16th. I can't remember the track listing, but I wrote, seems like a real fucking mess.
Well, there was original songs from Kid Rock.
Yes. Will I look up the track listing if I can?
I thought you were going to, so that's why I didn't.
Yeah, I obviously meant to at some stage, but we watched this show so long ago that I had forgotten to.
So,
okay, so
there's actual,
it's got its own Wikipedia page.
There's actual good shocking wrestling teams on it. So there is,
oh, man.
There is Crush'em, the Sting Crow team, I believe, is on it.
Yeah.
I think
do you want me to go through it track by track here?
Go for it.
Do you want to guess how many tracks are on this album?
There are 22.
26.
Ah. I may have owned this, okay. Dave.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was going to say, would we do we see if we can dig up Andrew Rich to do a Music of the Mat crossover on the Patreon with us. Do a track-by-track review of this.
Well, Music of the Mat is on a hiatus at the moment, so he might be up for
if
that.
If anything, asking him to do this would extend that hiatus, I think. Just block us. So we've got Make Some Noise by DJ Ran, Adrenaline V1, which is the name of the Nitro theme by Purity, Take It by the Insane Clown Posse, Here Comes the Pain by Slayer, the Goldberg theme, which is, firstly, I'm now learning, is called Invasion.
Yeah.
And is by Christian Poulet and Jean-Yves Rigaud.
Did you not know it was called Invasion?
No, I didn't. Huh. Well, if I did, I forgot it long ago.
Okay.
Crush 'em by Megadeth, of course. What Up Match by Heart and Helm. Blast by Kid Rock. Self High Five, the DDP theme by Heart and Helm. Heart and Helm are all over this record, by the way. Loose by Primer 55. The Sting theme by Heart and Helm. Seek and Destroy Live by Metallica. Buff Daddy by Heart and Helm. Faith by Limp Bizkit.
Oh,
Everlast.
Okay, I didn't know Fate was on it. I knew there was a Limp Bizkit song. I didn't know it was Fate.
American Made by Jimmy Hart and JJ Maguire. Bone Crusher by the Lyrical Giants. Got Him in the Corner by it must be just an audio because it's 16 seconds long and it's got no artist. A song called Pay-Per-View by The Rough Riders, featuring Dragon, Jadakiss, Eve, and Styles.
They were all big art. Well, I won't say big
Eve
artists.
Eve and Jadakiss were definitely
they're
names.
Definitely known, yeah.
Yeah. That's wild. That's wild. And obviously, we know Rough Riders. Make the Crowd Roar by Big Punisher and Fat Joe. Kevin Nash, Wolfpack Team by Craig Scruggs, also Heart and Helm. Fistful by Cypress Hill. Count That Man Out, which is another just audio track. Give It Up by Screwball. Bow Wow Wow, Conan featuring Mad One.
Oh, Jesus.
Rap Is Crap, I Hate Rap by the West Texas Rednecks, Heart and Helm. And the Nitro Girls song by Heart and Helm.
Hang on, the Nitro Girls had a song.
Yeah, they're just that. No, I think it's just the song they always dance to.
Was there just one song?
Well, it always felt like the one song to me.
I've never realised that.
Did you know this record was certified gold in the US?
Hell yeah.
Having sold 500,000 units.
I mean,
of which you were apparently one.
Are you surprised?
It's got a 2.5-star rating from AllMusic, so it's not bad.
Is that 2.5 stars out of 5 or 2.5 stars out of 10?
Out of 5.
Okay.
Weirdly enough. So yeah, you think you might own this?
I think I may have owned it. Or I definitely got a rip of it off somebody.
Mean Gene backstage with Berlin and the Bodyguard. The penny finally drops with Gene that this Berlin guy looks an awful lot like Alex Wright.
I love that.
That's investigative journalist Gene Okerlund here.
And I love that they cover the mic as he's about to say Alex Wright.
It's like, oh, you saw you dancing around here before. And yeah, he covers the microphone and says you were mistaken and threatens to put him in a wheelchair if he keeps talking. And then he threatens Curly Bill. Oh, Burly Bill has imploded, sadly, on this show. Sid backstage with the returned Terry Taylor. He is looking for Rick Steiner. Curly Bill versus Berlin. Man, we're all so sad. We had so invested in Burly Bill last week. The bodyguard remains unidentified. And then, I have very little to say about this match, but I have a lot to say about something that happened Nitro.
Oh, is it Vampiro beating Berlin?
So.
Okay.
Actually, no, sorry. Yeah. Let me just read. This is all muddled. This is actually what happens on Thunder, isn't
okay.
it? The thing that happens
yes.
happens on Thunder.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have phrased this very badly in my notes. I will try to parse it out. 2 weeks ago, Vamp knocked Berlin out of the tournament.
Yes.
Last Monday, Berlin hit Vamp with a chain, causing him to lose to Buff and be knocked out of the tournament.
Yes.
This all makes sense so far. Right. Larry absolutely buries Alex Wright and the nickname of Berlin. Like, this is another thing. Like, Dave has given out in the newsletter about how bad Tony is. But, like, Larry is outright hostile towards things that are happening in the company, whereas Tony is just, like, he's checked out.
Yeah.
But he's not outwardly burying the product in the way that Larry is at this stage frequently.
Well, doing. Larry is just full-on calling him Alex Berlin now.
Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah, because his Berlin is a nickname.
Yeah.
And for maybe the only time I will ever get to say this, a large misfit appears as in the middle of this match, Jerry Only comes out.
Yes.
Now, he cuts one of the most bizarre promos, like a promo that was clearly written by Sid. And I have a question for you, Lee.
Go for it.
I have written this entire promo down. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
Now, suitably, I have written it in all caps because it was delivered in all caps. And how would you describe the delivery of this promo?
Bad.
Well, bad.
Bad would be one way.
Unhinged, but not in a way that was.
Oh yeah,
good unhinged.
Like definitely not. Like. You know when somebody's on cocaine and they're unhinged?
Yeah.
Yes. That's not what this was. This was a different kind of unhinged. This was like, I don't know why I've been given this microphone unhinged.
Do you know somebody somebody that's like trying to act really confident but isn't, which is mad because it's somebody who was literally a performer
yes.
themselves.
This man has probably
so uncomfortable.
Performed in much darker crowds than this.
So he says, he starts off with a, "Hear me, big man." And I was loving that energy of the first line. "Hear the voice of your doom. Last Monday night, you beat down my dark angel. You may be a monster in that ring, but out on the streets, we vampires reign supreme." Motherfucker was just rhyming at one point. Like, he's a fucking Riddler or some shit.
First of all, we have to say, you don't see him for the first like three or four lines of this.
No, you just hear me, big man. You're just like, who the fuck is this?
I will say, according to your impression, it's Jerry Adams. Not Jerry Only.
Hear me, big man.
That would be quite a scary fucking promo. That totally changes the fucking tone.
Jerry Adams in body paint. You're me, big man.
Talking to Ian Paisley.
Berlin, very much the Ian Paisley of wrestling. They've always said it. Now, Lee, I have to ask you, in the years of doing this podcast, we've cut some obscure Irish references on this thing. Have we ever done a more niche reference than the Reverend Ian Paisley?
He's surely well known. He's got to be known outside of Irish circles.
I don't know if he's, like, we've quite a lot of American listeners. I'm quite sure, like, they would like, I'm, this is not me denigrating the US. This is me saying we live in a bubble in Ireland. That I'm quite sure the majority of the Americans have don't know who Jerry Adams is and are feverishly Googling the man.
Yeah, baby. I don't know. Like, we have done Rod Little jokes, so.
We have. He did run away and leave his wife for a young
Yeah, boy. That's true.
Anyway. The vampires reign supreme. That's where we're at here in this. Why don't you step into my world and I'll rip your head off and feed you to my boys. Meet me out back. And then he just wanders off. This causes the unidentified bodyguard to, and I can't think of a better verb for this. I apologize to the man soon to be known as the Wall, but he lurched after him. And I don't mean he lurched like trying to grab him. I meant he moved like Lurch from the Addams Family.
I thought he kind of sauntered. So I wouldn't say lurched.
He was full on, like he was just the horizontal arm short of doing the Frankenstein to go get him. This causes the bodyguard to lurch after him, presumably to the back. Berlin stands in the ring, fucking baffled by this whole thing.
Excuse me, Alex Berlin.
Vamp sneaks in and attacks Berlin for the DQ. Pummels him with a chain. The bodyguard wanders back out, also confused again. Vamp is gone. Curly Bill covers him and counts his own pin before the bodyguard gets in. It's like, fuck off, and throws him out. We're on a fucking roll with these segments. Fucking hot messes up and down. It's sad to say Vince Russo finally found out he has another 2-hour show to book.
Oh, and if you didn't believe that, this next segment will tell you.
Gene is here with Silver King and La Parca. Gene is saying that they're the butt of the joke here in World Championship Wrestling. Not only this week is La Parca, he was subtitled last week. And now he's being dubbed badly, right? I have several problems with this. One, incredibly racist. Okay, so that's the headline problem.
Yeah, that's the main problem, yes.
Secondly, this is universe breaking because both Silver King and Gene Okerlund are pretending he's not. Which is literally impossible because one, like, he's not being dubbed in real life. That's not a thing that happens. But also, Silver King, who speaks Spanish, and Gene Okerlund, who does not, are simultaneously able to understand this man.
Yes. But Silver King also speaks perfect English.
Well, I don't know anymore what Russo's world is trying to tell us.
So, so Russo's, again, you know, this being the man that says on tape, nobody in America will ever give a damn about a Mexican.
He was certainly right about one American. Him.
So this is his idea to get La Parca, the guy that was already over. Let's remember that. The man has been over in WCW for the guts of 2 years at this point.
Yep.
This is his idea to get him over, to dub him badly, like a old Kung Fu movie.
Yes. Which, in wrestling, worked exactly once in my recollection to get somebody over, and it was a comedy jobber tag team.
Indeed.
Yes. That is the one occasion. And also, that did get them over, but it wasn't not racist either.
Indeed.
Indeed, yes.
Incredibly racist.
Let's run through a question I've definitely asked before. What the fuck is going on with Chavo Guerrero?
Yeah, this I have no recollection of. Chavo is
no recollection.
Now a salesman.
Now, can I comment as well that what we're about to describe is the tone of this skit is like he's been doing this for weeks. This isn't an introduction to what this character is doing. This feels like we joined a character already several skits in progress.
Yeah, I think we missed a week, didn't we? Like Thunder,
nope.
Was Thunder not off a week? No,
it's coming up. It's coming up. It has nearly 3 weeks off.
Okay.
So you are right that there is a break coming. This was not that week.
Okay, so Chavo is just in character now for this new character out of nowhere.
Yeah. Now, again, it's a 3-hour Nitro. So who's to say there wasn't four Chavo selling stuff segments on Nitro? I'm not going to go find out.
So do you think Chavo was in between towns and was approached to start working for this company?
Yeah, he was approached by Big Daddy Dudley to like join his traveling salesman business.
Do you know what? I could get into a family of Chavos.
Could you? One was already too much for us in the first year of Thunder.
Dances with Chavo.
Dances with Chavo.
Golfing with Chavo.
Yeah, and they all have Pepes.
Well, they all have Papas.
That's true, true. Chavo, yeah, yes. Yeah. So yeah, basically he's attempting to sell Viano 5s and body spray.
Yeah.
And that's...
Well, also bug spray.
Yeah. Also bug spray. Yes. Yes, it's body and bug spray. Then Gene asks Rick what the deal is with Sid, which is a very good question. He tells Sid to come get some. Sid runs on screen to get some and has to be pulled away by security.
Can I just say, Sid is the biggest babyface in this business.
Yeah.
He bullies Terry Taylor in the opening of the show. And now he's attacking Rick Steiner. This man is after my heart. And I'm here
this
for...
This man is clearing house. I think it's funny, you know, the way we talk about the treatment of the luchadors and how Vince Russo feels about them. And it feels like the kind of... Not the honourable thing, but the thing that would clearly work better for him and be less embarrassing for them is if he just stopped booking them altogether. But it's this whole, I will book them to embarrass them thing that I can't get my head around. Like, this is where it turns from, like, passively racist into actively.
Again, Dave, you could substitute Mexican wrestlers there for women and you would have a lot of the issues with Vince Russo. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
So Parker cuts a dubbed promo in the ring, burying the entire division of luchadors, saying he hates being stuck in the same crappy matches. Brawl breaks out straight away. Tanay says on Monday, and I'm going to couch this, what I'm about to say next, by saying in advance, no, we will not do a Knights of Nitro for this. Because someone will ask, Lee.
This is the thing. People are now asking us to do every Nitro. It's not the same person asking us
to do it. No, it's not.
It's just
different people
will say, oh, can you do that Nitro?
Yeah, because we're starting to hit an era where a lot of people's personal favorite stupid thing is happening. And my answer to it is, there's just too much. And some of it we will get a chance to cover on the Thunder episodes because they will show a package or they will have the follow-on. Like, we were able to talk about the kind of, like, Berlin and Vampiro costing each other things on Nitro because they showed it here and it played into a thing. I can't co-sign, because I think Lee will stop talking to me on making him watch 3 hours of a Nitro from a period he doesn't care about just to watch the Matt classic that is Vampiro and the Misfits wrestling Berlin and the Bodyguard.
Now, let me come in and say I was very into Vampiro and the Misfits. I do remember that whole run. I was into it. Mm-hmm. But I am not going back to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not happening, guys. I'm sorry. It's just not happening. There's going to be so many opportunities for us to jump across. I just can't do it for this. Larry, as ever, hostile against the company. His attempt at talking them into the building on Monday is... He doesn't know if the Misfits can even play music, let alone wrestle. Brilliant, Larry. Thanks for that. Sting versus Total Package on Monday as well. More on that later. Lismark nearly fucking kills himself, coming short on a suicide dive.
Mm-hmm.
Silver King with a plancha onto Viano. Lismark then eats shit on a splash. Like, Lismark was out here with a fucking death wish this night.
I'm telling you, every time we see Lismark, we're impressed in different ways.
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
This time it's an impressed
it makes
he didn't
entertaining
die.
Television. Yeah, yeah. We won't elaborate on it. He always makes good TV.
Yeah.
Then we have Parker hitting the twisting corkscrew moonsault for the win. Parker then lays out his opponents after the bell. I will say that twisting corkscrew moonsault of his is somehow both incredibly athletic and incredibly not athletic, because the actual physical maneuvering of his body is very impressive, but it also kind of just looks like he saunters off the top rope and falls on them at the same time. Like, it's a very conflicting maneuver.
I'll tell you what, I'm into this Laparca Silver King team.
Yeah.
Which means it's not going to last long.
No. If they were just like a high spots tag team and they didn't have this fucking dubbed and subtitled promo thing, it'd be great. It'd be the highlight of the show.
I could get into them being like just these fucking, like, the kings of the luchadors in WCW.
Yeah, I love the, if you could tell the story of them as a tag team, that Silver King is like, look, I've been a bit dastardly, but now I've got my new bandana. I'm going to make a real go at trying to be legit. Whereas Laparca is just like, yeah, but I'm also going to kill them all with chairs after we're done. I think that's a good dynamic for a tag team. And they're just two beefy boys as well. Yeah. Like a big da tag team. Absolutely. So then we have Berlin laying out Curly Bill in the bathroom. On this show, a story that they're telling consistently across both shows, but aren't making into a big deal at all, that absolutely should be a big deal and could get people emotionally invested, is the Kurt Hennig retirement thing. They just keep like casually mentioning it and doing like little segments, but not really drawing attention to the fact that WCW have told Kurt Hennig if he loses, he has to retire.
But Dave, they beat him on Nitro.
Yeah. But it wasn't right. It was, what was it, a disqualification?
No, it was a countdown, so it didn't count, apparently.
Yeah, it didn't count. Yeah. So the thing, like, if you wanted to actually do this, this would be the most compelling story in the company within a month.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, even though he's washed physically, as we have reported extensively since he showed up in the company, people still have a real... To this day now, people still have a huge soft spot for Kurt Hennig. Yeah, so if you did this right...
It's simple. You start him with jobbers, then he faces Cruiserweights... Yep. Then he starts taking on mid-carders, and then you build to a pay-per-view match where he takes on somebody.
But this is the thing, and you could either get great heat on a heel, or you could turn somebody by beating him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's value in who beats him then.
Hey, remember when Hangman beat the fucking ever-loving piss out of Jeff Jarrett, and now Jeff Jarrett is one of the most over faces in the company?
But this, as I was going to say, because we know the company is heading towards make Jeff Jarrett the guy. It's like, do a pay-per-view where it like, you have Hennig has gone on this hot streak, mm-hmm. and he's still one match away from retirement, but he's on such a hot streak, he can't be denied a world title shot.
Yep.
And have the undeserving newly crowned champion Jeff Jarrett
beat him
versus Hennig's career. Like, gangbusters. Gangbusters. Anyway, he's defiant in this promo. He's trying, I will say this, in his segments, he's trying to get a bit of interest on it, but the company just clearly doesn't care. And he's talking about if he loses to Malenko tonight. this is the second time I wrote in my notes, what the fuck is Javo doing? He's selling plates and diapers to Kaz Hayashi.
I'd love to see this catalogue he's selling out of.
Yeah. I just don't. There is actually even money on by next Thunder, this is already not happening anymore. Because, like, this is the thing. Because I don't remember this, even though I was watching at the time, it gives me the belief that this is very short-lived.
You could tell me that Chavo does another four gimmicks between now and Lieutenant Loco, and I'd believe you.
Yeah, because that's like... early summer next year, mm-hmm. isn't it? Like, that's around the time of the reboot. So, like, at most, you're getting, like, 4 or 5 months out of this. I don't think it's getting close to 4 or 5 months. Anyway, Nitro rewind. Deep breath. Kidman pins Smiley after Knob's interference. We get Johnny Boone versus Evan Courageous.
Yep.
The replay of that we saw earlier. Buff beating Evan. Benoit fighting Jarrett. Benoit interfering in Brett versus Saturn. Brett wins. Scott Hall and the Grand Wizard Kevin Nash beating Lash. This is the infamous...
Hang on. I will say, the Grand Wizard Kevin Nash is a fucking great bit.
Look, it's an iconic image.
It's a great bit.
Yeah. Creative Control trying to help. This is really funny as well. Like, Creative Control debuted like 2 weeks ago and they're fucking nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Thunder. So we see Creative Control trying to help Jeff Jarrett beat Hennig, but Hennig held on to the outside to get deliberately counted out, which apparently doesn't count, as we talked about. So that's your Nitro recap. Gina's with Booker, asks who was the mystery woman on Monday. He says they go way back, and anyone who gets up in his face, it's lights out.
Well, it was lights out for midnight when she got hit with a guitar.
True.
You forgot to run down the final eight in the tournament that we got.
As part of the Nitro recap.
So our final eight in and the quarterfinals will be taking place on Nitro. So we have Bret Hart versus Kidman. Yeah. We have Sting versus the Package.
Pretty good. Yeah, big names. Not a good match, big names.
We have Buff versus Jarrett, paying off their angle. And Benoit versus Hall.
It's not a bad collection of names. I mean, like, in terms of,
yeah, you've got Hart and Sting and Package, the kind of known quantities there, Hall as well. And then you've got Benoit, Buff, Kidman, and Jarrett, I suppose, the kind of up and coming names. But it's not the worst final eight they could have had.
Yeah. No, yeah, they definitely could and have done a lot worse in terms of
wait until you see
putting together programs.
Wait until we get to the fucking US title tournament that's to start soon.
Holy fuck. Yeah. Holy fuck. Let's not get ahead of ourselves there. So Sid then asks a tiny monitor of Rick Steiner, why? Which I think is Sid's best acting performance since he jumped on his crushed up car.
Yep.
We see Disco, speaking of acting, Disco owing money. Man on the phone says the powers that be might look kindly on him if he takes Hennig out tonight. Then we have a world television title match. Rick Steiner versus Booker T. So Rick, WCW attacks Booker for a few seconds before Booker takes control. Shoulder checks and drops down until Rick captures him mid-leapfrog and puts him down on the ground. Belly to belly, Sid versus Goldberg at Mayhem is going to be no DQ. That should
be a hoot. I quit, I believe.
Oh, it's I quit, is it? Sorry. Or with no DQ. Booker attempts to fire up again, gets a punch in the gut that sends him stumbling to the floor. We get a Booker comeback with a Harlem sidekick, a spinneroony, and a missile dropkick. But Rick shoves Billy Silverman in the way of the dropkick. Out comes Sid immediately as Rick hits a DDT. Sid shoves Rick off the top, powerbombs Rick, rolls Booker on top, and then puts the ref in. We have a new champion. Johnny Boone then tries to reverse the decision, gets powerbombed, as does Billy Silverman. Rick takes him down, punches, security are in, and Tanae confirms that the decision was reversed. Or was it Hudson? Hudson.
It was Hudson, yeah. Why was this decision reversed, but all the other times interference happens, it wasn't?
Yeah, again, this is universe shattering that the decisions can be reversed if somebody spots interference. Like,
do you think Johnny Boone just happened to be walking past him on their backstage and went, that's Sid, he shouldn't be out there.
Holy shit. We see the Revolution and Asia power walking to the ring. We have a singles match that is Dean Malenko versus Kurt Hennig with Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, and Asia all hanging out. Shane's on commentary. He says they'll be back in the ring quicker than anyone expects. There's a couple minutes here where these two lads are just wrestling, which was a nice breather for me in this show.
I will say the wrestling, it was sloppy, but it was that kind of good sloppy where it worked. Like,
yeah,
they have chemistry, but it was messy. Kind of like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that this was pretty good, like, especially considering Henning is fucking washed.
Yeah, and I was bummed about how, like, he's fighting for his life and his career in this match, but commentary couldn't stop talking to Shane Douglas about Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Cloverleaf attempt, Henning nearly rolls him up on it. I know I'm harping on it again, but, like every near fall should be getting pops in these Henning matches, like, if you worked it right. Like, everything should be heart in your mouth. But anyway.
But do you believe if he loses, he's gone? Because I don't think anybody does.
No, well, this is the problem. Mm-hmm. Cloverleaf attempt heading nearly rolls him up. Saturn then macking on a woman in at ringside. Hennig leapfrogs a corner charge and Malenko hits the ring post. Ref gets distracted by Asia. A cast to the back by Shane Douglas. Malenko goes to cover. Disco comes out and attempts to pin a man in a match he is not part of.
Yep, because he's a moron.
Yes. So he heard the call about how it would be good for you, the powers that be would like it if you took out Hennig. And instead of coming out and just costing Hennig the match, it's not like the world title was on the line and he thought, maybe the ref will think I'm in this match and give me the world title. This was just a singles match. His stated goal was to cost Kurt Hennig the match, and he came out the stupidest man in town and attempted to pin him. Now, to be fair, there is precedent here in that Sid was interfering in matches and pinning men when he wasn't in them.
That,
so maybe
that is true.
Disco hit his head and thought he was Sid. Which, there is no man who is not Sid more than Disco Inferno.
Again, very true.
Road. It's a whole fucking mess, and Benoit comes out in his dress shirt, hits a headbutt on Malenko, and Hennig wins. Mac Daddy Saturn is enraged because he missed all of this. We go backstage. Rick and Sid are still being pulled apart. Then we have Gene with the fucking maestro. Jesus fucking Christ, this is dead on arrival. Man.
You're not into the maestro?
He's in a hardcore match with Knobs. What?
You're not into the maestro?
No. He talks an absolute load of shite about doing a heavy metal performance tonight. Calls himself the hardcore virtuoso. Fucking crickets. Then we get the match. Knobs versus the maestro. Norman is on commentary. And look, I have no ill will towards Norman Smiley, but Jesus Christ, like, this was a bad match and he did not help.
You forgot to mention that at Mayhem, a WCW hardcore champion will be crowned. In a match between Knobs and Screaming Norman. He's now officially Screaming Norman Smiley.
Yes. Commentary says the consensus opinion is that Smiley is lucky and fortunate because he's winning matches by the skin of his teeth. This match is dog shit. Maestro is just selling badly for slow motion plunder. Jimmy Hart gets on a headset and calls Norman a coward and says Knobs is really hardcore.
I did like this bit because Norman cowers behind Hudson. Yeah, as Jimmy is berating him.
Norman runs up and hits Jimmy with a violin case. Knobs comes to his aid. Norman flattens him with a pipe and does the wiggle. Maestro stumbles out and rolls Knobs up for the win.
Yeah, because apparently this match was false going anywhere.
Yeah, we get the Filthy Animals arguing with each other. Dean Malenko and Asia apparently beat Ray and Tori in a mixed tag on Monday while Tori was handcuffed to the corner. We get a World Tag Team title match. The Filthy Animals versus Jerry Flynn and Barb. Like, really, like, this is how, like, this is the second week in a row where it's like, I don't know, name two tag teams and they get to one and they're like, fuck. Can't think of another tag team.
To be fair, they're both in the first family.
Yeah. It is a little bit better. Yeah. But in terms of going for a World Tag Team title shot, sorry, not for me. Wrestled at the big men's pace, which is to say slow.
Yes.
The lads are preoccupied on commentary, talking about beef between the Nitro Girls, which we'll get a little bit more on, and I could not give a fuck about.
Fucking hell.
Flynn comes in, Barb suplexes Conan, but Kidman splashes Barb for the win. Gene with total package. Now, I kind of like... We'll talk about the match later, but I am loving... pompous idiot total package as a gimmick.
It's great.
I'm still, there's a bit at the end of the match where I'm like, okay, that's definitely intentional, but there's still a lot of the time where I'm like, I'm not sure if all of these Lex is an idiot bits are supposed to be
exactly. I'm not sure it works. If it's him playing it up or if it's him being him, but whatever it is, it works.
Yeah. Is he ashamed of macing Sting? He asks. And he suggests... Oh, yeah. Gene says, are you scamming a knee injury to get out of the match with Sid? He said he was trying to mace Goldberg and miss. He has hurt feelings at the insinuation that he was faking. He's going to beat Sting and then he's going to be back on track. Then we get the Nitro Girl recap. Like, we know Kimberly quit the Nitro Girls. And now we have Spice and AC Jazz feuding with each other. And they do... this is one thing that really annoys me, is we get like half a dozen talking heads about this feud. Who could give a fuck? And two, I'm thinking again about the Kurt Hennig thing. It's like you're dedicating multiple segments to this Nitro Girl feud to build it. And Kurt Hennig is like fighting for his life out there. And you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, but Larry is into AC Jazz. So, you know, you got to give TV time to AC Jazz.
Holy shit, this Revolution segment. This is your Russo wink wink insider moment of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Dean takes exception to Benoit saying there'd be no revolution without him. He says the revolution is far from over. Fuck's sake. Like, have a promo revolution where you don't say the word revolution 8 or 9 different times, please. Not only that, but you can tell Shane Douglas is phoning it in when he does a Webster's Dictionary defines revolution as bit. He literally does that bit, and not ironically. He talks about revolutions in engines and in the Beatles. Saturn does, sorry. Mm-hmm. Saturn starts talking about revolutions in car engines and the Beatles, and then Dean stops dead and says, who writes your promos? And Saturn says, I do, and I've got hundreds of them. So also, we'll give WWF a bit of credit. The Perry Saturn is an idiot character started a long time before we gave it credit.
We expect him to say Moppy.
I know, right? You know, I was expecting to say you're welcome at the end. Yeah. Then we get what I thought was a fabulous match that also is impossible to rate because it's not a good wrestling match, but it's great.
Okay, first of all, Total Package comes to the ring with Liz.
Yes.
And he's got his knee wrapped, but it's wrapped over his jeans.
His incredibly thick denim jeans.
And he has the jeans wrapped, not his knee. It's a great
game. It's unbelievable.
Second of all, as he's making his entrance, they mentioned that on Saturday night, or sorry, on Nitro, sorry, it's Jimmy Hart versus Screaming Norman in a hardcore match.
Yeah. Two cowards. Yeah. The coward derby.
Anyway, this match.
Lex refers to himself as the Cal Ripken of professional wrestling, saying he has over 3,000 consecutive matches. I don't know what that means. But also, like, he's been injured multiple times, so I don't know how that's consecutive. He's currently saying he's injured and wasn't going to wrestle tonight. Also, I looked at Cage Match, and by their estimate, he's wrestled about 2,100 times total in his career.
His whole career.
Lex calls Kaz Hashi.
Yes, Hashi.
Says, I won't wrestle tonight, but luckily for all of you, I will be ready for Sting on Monday. Kaz gets on the mic and says, chicken shit. Lex immediately stops selling the leg and beats the dog fuck out of him. Hits him with the rack and wins. And the funniest thing I've seen in weeks on this show, where he's so jazzed that he won, he pops up the top to show off his abs, takes a knee to flex, and Liz whisper in his ear. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Starts selling the knee again.
It's fucking brilliant. I loved it. This whole segment was great.
Am I turning a corner on Lex Luger? Yeah. Like, this is a great bit.
Down to the bit of getting Kaz's name wrong. The faking the injury, the popping the top up to show off the abs. Like, he's so jazzed that he won. Like, it's
like that time, remember that Randy Orton hit a leapfrog and he just lost it.
It's just a great bit. What was I going to say? I can't remember now.
We'll move on. We got some fast and furious segments here. So Sid and Saturn are getting ready for the main event. Mayhem Pro promo focused on you will have the tournament winner at this show. Benoit and La Parca holding court from a distance is fucking weird. Also, the idea that La Parca got back into his entrance gear after the match is very funny.
Was it not Kaz Hayashi and La Parca?
They said Benoit.
I thought it was Kaz.
On commentary. I was typing my notes and they said Benoit.
I thought it was Kaz.
So it could have been Kaz. Let's not rule out that it was Kaz. They announced Sid versus Rick on Monday is official. Then we get our main event here. Perry Saturn versus Sid Vicious. Shane Douglas on commentary again, because we can have nothing. And I remember starting out as the high man on Shane Douglas when he showed up, but this is fucking like every appearance is the same on commentary.
Am I insane here, or is Larry making out that the Revolution are faces in all of their feuds?
Yeah, but I don't think any of them have an idea anymore what anybody is.
I mean,
doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's true actually.
He's put it this way, which is more believable? That or that Larry is paying close attention to the product.
Yeah, it's true. Unless AC Jazz has been mentioned.
Yeah, true. Sid starts strong, catches a crossbody and lands him in a backbreaker. Sid dodges another. Saturn goes... He ducks under another crossbody and sends Saturn flying out over the top to take out Dean on the floor. I thought that was cool. This is where I noticed the commentary table is in a weird spot at the corner at the end of the ramp.
Yeah, they didn't have a segment. You know the way they'd have the segment of the guardrail pushed back for them on Nitro? They were just at the corner of the entrance.
Yeah, very weird. Sid drops him on the fence and then he kind of rolls over, lands in the crowd. Dean gets caught trying to sneak up on Sid and he's like, oh fuck, I want none of this. Walks away. Saturn hits a suplex, hits his rebound leg drop for two. It looks like he caught Sid very snug in the face with that rebound leg drop, by the way. Sid hits a big boot, calls for the choke slam. Saturn kicks him in the midsection on the way up to get out of it. Attempts a double axe handle, lands right back in a choke slam, hits a powerbomb. Asia pulls him out at two. Ref calls for the DQ. Usually a pullout doesn't get the DQ straight away, but he did. Malenko then eats a powerbomb. Maybe the biggest reaction of the night is when Asia squares up to Sid.
Yeah, because they wanted to see Sid powerbomb Asia. It wasn't Asia was standing up to Sid. It was, oh, we're going to see Sid kill her.
We're going to see a woman get injured. Yeah. What I loved about this was, though, because they're clearly like they're flirting with the idea of making their own China. Because for a second, she kicks him and goes to powerbomb him. Now, that would have been a spot for the ages. He goes to do it. The DFG attacks. Shane saves Asia. Sid hits the closest to two stiff big boots to the chest you'll ever see on Rick Steiner to ensure that motherfucker actually sells and we go off the air.
Do you know what? As tough as Rick Steiner is, I don't think he'd be fucking with Sid too much.
No. What did you think of the main event?
The main event was a bit of a fucking bust, really. Like, again, Sid, I maintain Sid is getting over. He's now, I won't say officially a face because he's facing off at Rick Steiner. But like the show in general, I actually thought the show was pretty easy to watch. It was like a decent show. There's a lot of stuff that's bad, so don't get me wrong.
It's the thing we said about Russo shows is that at least at the moment there are a lot of bad things. We've been talking about them on the show, but everything is moving so quickly there's not enough time for you to fully turn on the show.
They're insanely watchable.
Yeah. Now the problem is the quality will keep dipping and it will go over that tipping point where yes, the pace is still 100 miles an hour, but it's no longer watchably entertaining, only in an ironic way. So yeah, that leaves us with the end of Thunder for this week. Lee, what were your overall thoughts on the show? Give us your winners and losers.
Like I said, the show was pretty watchable, enjoyable for the most part. Like even the bad stuff, like you say, doesn't stick around so long that it's like something bad happens and you're on to the next thing, so you don't linger on it too much. Without a doubt, the two best things are one, Sid, and two, Lex Luger's gimmick that we're not sure if it's a gimmick or not. The losers is Silver or Leparica's new incredibly racist gimmick. Not into that at all. And also the fact that the first family are still all over the show. I do not need Brian Knobs or Jerry Flynn or the Barbarian on my TV in 1999.
No. Never again. Thank you very
also,
much.
Also, the Nitro Girl drama.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. We're the losers for that. The finish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga has 9 matches on this show. Hard as that may be to believe. 4 clean finishes, even harder to believe. 2 DQs or countouts, and 3 interference leading directly to a finish. Thank you all very much for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. We will be back behind the paywall, actually later this week, hopefully, because we are a few days behind. And then we will be back here on the VOW feed in 2 weeks. So until then, you know, yeah. I forgot how I signed. This is how long it's been since we've done a normal thing. I forgot how to fucking sign off. Everybody enjoy your week, whatever. See you later.
Good luck.
Sound. Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. Keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us. You can follow us on Twitter at WCW Thunderpod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
You like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.